Today's podcast is brought to you by the Occasional Magazine. Download the quarterly magazine that focuses on the nexus of high fidelity and lifestyle. The Winter Magazine goes live this Saturday, 2/3, February 3. So check out all the details on parttimeaudiophile.com. You can download the magazine from the link right at the top in the navigation bar. We have a very special episode today brought to you live from New York City, the world of Macintosh, debut of two lovely speakers and their two lovely creators. The two gentlemen on this podcast are really what they describe as the body and soul of these two new loudspeakers, one by Sonus Faybar and one by Macintosh that we're seeing this weekend here at their display area. Both gentlemen are based out of Italy, but one designs the outside of the speaker and the other the innards. So without further ado, on to the interview. Thanks for joining us. We are at the wonderful World of Macintosh townhome in New York City today. It's very exciting. It's a very famous building. It has a pool on the second floor that you may have seen in many music videos. But the main focus of our attention is not the extravagant pool, but rather two new speakers unveiled recently. We're getting a taste of them today at the showroom. The XRT2.1K from Macintosh, and the Sonus Faybar Aida. Now, we also have the Chief Design Officer of the same speakers with us, and as eloquently put, he's the industrial designer, and if you'd like to think about it, as the body and the soul of the loudspeaker. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Livio Cucuzza, and I'm in charge of the industrial design of the Macintosh Group.
And so for we're kind of looking at the external parts of this these two loudspeakers, because we're looking at two of them this weekend. Is there anything specifically that you were going for? Let's start with the XRT. In terms of this loudspeaker, was the sky the limit in terms of the materials you could use, or was it still something? Because it looks pretty fancy. It looks pretty beautiful.
Thank you.
What kind of things do you take into consideration when designing the outside?
I mean, the concept there was to create something very big and huge and heavy, because Macintosh is about, you know, power and it's truly American things, and so very different from the Sonus Faber design, for example. Mm. It's like white and black. Mm-hmm. So the other things is that we had to deal with the line array technology that forced the design in some ways. But that was the fun part, because design without limits, it's art, and so it's a different job.
But before you go on, I maybe just wanted to ask you, do you personally have any specific brands or artists that you've always admired that you draw from, aside from this brand, obviously?
Of course I have. In case of design of the of audio equipment, it's Dieter Rams, it's the master. Mm-hmm. I mean, what he did with Brown and the Bauhaus was inspiring still today.
Do you have any any particular maybe building designer? I lived in Chicago for a time. Mm-hmm. I really got bit by any building designer, any physical designer that you also had, artist perhaps, someone way out there?
I used to be a big fan of Calatrava. Mm-hmm. Because I love the form that became a function, and vice versa. So I really like the structure that he can create that are beautiful and also functional in the same time.
Much like the speaker.
Yeah, exactly.
And I do think for a lot of men who don't necessarily maybe make a lot of trips to art museums, this is their piece of art. Yep. It sits in their living room, and they see it every single day, just like something that hangs on the wall. And the shine, the lacquer, and the external look is like a little temple to audio to them, I think. So definitely very much appreciated, especially when you get beyond the box and you're looking at a 3D structure that performs a function. So back to the speaker, does it come in more than one color, or is it just the one design for
Macintosh
this?
Is black.
Macintosh is black. So you took those into consideration. Is there what is the main material of the construct in this loudspeaker?
We use a special HDF, that it's basically a high density MDF for the structure, and it's reinforced inside to have the proper strength. And then we use aluminum for all the ribs and these spiders that take the line array panel linked to the structure. So and glass, of course. Glass is part of the Macintosh DNA. Mm. So we use glass on the base. We use glass on the array panel. Yeah.
And I'm sure much time and energy has been dispensed on bracing for loudspeakers. Mm-hmm. Is there anything particularly new or different that you did for this loudspeaker?
But in this case, I have to say that we worked with very strong kind of reinforcement inside, because the pressure that the 3 bus driver in particular is really huge. And we had to reinforce especially the mid section of the unit of the speaker with aluminium on front and back to ensure the right stability.
And also, there's a bit of, I'm assuming the line array mounted to the front has quite a bit of weight to it as well that you had to compensate for.
Yeah, it's an extruded part in aluminium, so it's pretty heavy. Yeah,
you don't want it to tip over. That'd be horrible. It's a beautiful piece. So moving on to the idea, anything in particular for that loudspeaker in terms of design and structure you thought was fun, different, or I've heard some amazing Sonos Faber rigs, big, even small. They have their own separate look. I think that is different from the Macintosh. Any special considerations in terms of the redesign for that guy?
First of all, I have to say that I'm particularly linked to the AIDA project because it was my very first project. And it was thanks to this, to that concept that I joined Sonos Faber. And it was a very nice kind of project because we had no limits, really, no limits to design a new speaker. We tried to understand what was the limit for our artisans, like the wood artisans and the aluminium one, and we pushed to have something really crazy. We are doing toys, right? Toys for adults. So
big boy toys.
Big boy toys. So when you approach a project like that, you have to enjoy. You have to leave the creativity free. And so in that case, we had this inspiration to create something that looks in movement also when it sticks to the floor. The idea was to create something that recalls this image of an explosion of energy from the floor to the sky. So the concept of the loudspeaker is not straight. It's not just a column. It's use organic curves and lines to emphasize this image of power and also dynamic. And that was really different from the classic Sonos Faber design. Sonos Faber was always famous for a good design, but AIDA was still different. So this is also the reason why I didn't find appropriate to change the look of the new AIDA, because it's a masterpiece. We want to say that AIDA is AIDA and nobody can change it. Maybe we will do something better, or more crazy in the future, but AIDA will stay AIDA.
Given that there is a kind of large population of people that kind of enter into this hobby of loudspeaker manufacturing, and they unfortunately sometimes the guys will come to shows and they'll just drop a driver in a square box. Mm-hmm. From your standpoint, does the shape of the outside have a large impact on the actual sound, or could you just do really good drivers in a square box and get the same results from any shape on the back end?
I'm sure that Paolo will be happy to have a big square cabinet with a lot of volume inside. I'm also sure that he knows better than me that an organic shape is better than a flat shape, a flat surface in terms of refraction. It's a little bit what happened with aerodynamics with the car. I mean, air, it's a fluid, and the propagation of the sound waves, it's for sure in a better condition when the speaker is more organic than a flat one.
And if, in terms of bass, is a larger cabinet always better? Internal space?
If you ask this to Paolo, he will say yes, of course.
If you ask this to the world of physics, the world of physics would answer yes.
Physics is boring.
But this is where we are stuck in, unfortunately. At least with our body, with our mind, we can go anywhere you want. But with our body, we're living in the world of physics. This is due to the wavelength. You know, bass frequencies are characterized by huge wavelength. And so it's clearly understandable that anytime you want to reach the deepest bass frequencies with a correct reproduction, you have to deal with a certain volume. You have some space to deal designing the speaker units in a certain way rather than in another way, but a certain amount of volume is required. On the other hand, I fully agree with Livio. A square box is far from being the best solution because the square box internally is creating a lot of, let me call them this way, even if it's not appropriate, fluttering echoes. Mm-hmm. You know, you have internal sound waves bouncing permanently against the parallel walls. In fact, one of the most important recognizable contributions of Sonos Faber to the growth of the loudspeaker design knowledge was introducing back in 1992 the lute shape, which for the first time created a cabinet which is made out of two curvature sides, removing the back of the cabinet as a matter of fact. And this way, you know, you are avoiding standing waves inside because in each point the reflection goes in a different one. So he manage the energy produced by the backfiring activity of the driver, mm-hmm. which is a huge improvement compared to any square box. Mm. Of course, even thickness and rigidity of the material and the relative resonance frequency has an impact. So it's better a thick square box than an organic thin layer of thing. Mm-hmm. But dealing with the same kind of quality materials, an organic shape is much better solution.
Audio production boxes, the look of most components is comprised of either black or silver. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that in particular. But do you think... do you have any rationale for the reason why people are so drawn to just black piano gloss on their speakers? Any insights?
I don't know. I know that it's one of the most sellable color around the world, so I think it's a common thing to do black speakers.
If you had a...
Not for Sonos Faber. That's the strange things.
Yeah. What color would you like to... Do you have a favorite color to work with or you would like to see?
Oh, no, I don't have a favorite color. I think that in case of Sons Faber, for example, we perfectly know that wood, it's our DNA. So we try to do a black, piano black version of our loudspeaker, and they never sell well like the wood one. Mm. So in case of Sons Faber, that things are a little bit different from what is normal. Mm-hmm. Red color in Sons Faber, it's the flag color. So we love red. It's 90% of our production. Mm. But I'm also happy to notice that when we introduced the new Homage collection, we introduced the Wenge finish, that it's a brown, very, very dark kind of wood. And now the sales are outperforming the red one. So this means that there is space to do new things. Mm.
And now we have the soul of the loudspeaker, the gentleman in charge of driver design and how the loudspeakers sound.
My name is Paolo Tezzone.
The new XRT 2.1K is one of the flagship pieces for Macintosh, and it has a kind of a rich heritage to it. When you went about designing the speaker, what steps did you take and what kind of collaborations did you work with?
Well, probably the first things to be said about the XRT 2.1K is about a little bit of background, because, of course, it is the flagship, the new flagship. The new flagship loudspeaker for the Macintosh brand, but it has been designed in Italy by Sonos Faber, by the Sonos Faber team, which is located in Italy but belonging to the Macintosh group. And Macintosh has a very special tradition from a technical standpoint in the passive loudspeaker system. And this tradition, this technical tradition is called line array. So the first things it took, I'm going to answer to your question, was to learn exactly how this kind of technology works, because the kind of speaker we are used to design belongs to a different, totally different technological family, which is the point source family. Mm. So it has been a learning and understanding and cultural job in first place. And then, of course, it has been always the same hard work that characterizes any huge loudspeaker system development. So it has been about developing the transducers in first step. It has been about creating the theoretical model which links together the transducer to the enclosures. It has been about designing the enclosure. It has been about putting the whole things together. It has been about making the whole thing work properly from an electrical standpoint, and then making the whole thing working properly from an acoustical standpoint. And this is also done thanks, the last thing is done thanks to the development of the quite complicated passive crossover circuit.
And for the average consumer looking at this product, can you just briefly describe what you feel is the benefit for the line array?
Well, the first benefit of a line array, it's a kind of a technology which is normally available anytime you are attending to an electrical music exhibition, an electrical music concert. So anything which is live music performed, not purely acoustic. The speakers that you are addressing the sound to the crowd normally as are a line array. And the main benefit is that the line array is able to project sound as a much longer distance compared to a traditional speaker design.
At a longer distance.
So the first thing you should expect from such a kind of speaker is that it's they are expressing themselves at their best anytime you're placing in a huge listening environment, and they are able to provide an amazing amount of dynamic, and the kind of sound is not particularly into the precision, detail, and finesse kind of word, but it's more on the emotional impact, on the physical impact that music is able to provide.
I just noticed from my listening session upstairs that, I, generally speaking, the voices sound a bit larger than life, a little bigger than if they were just coming from a single point. when they come from a multitude of points. And how many, off the top of your head, do you know roughly how many drivers of each type are on the line array that addresses the front?
Well, we use for each speaker 45 tweeters.
45.
28 upper mid-ranges, a pair of filler low mid-ranges, and 6 8-inch woofers.
And I noticed that each speaker is not an exact copy of each other. They're actually designated for left and right channels. Can you explain that thought process and how that impacts?
Obviously, as you correctly mentioned, one of the possible weaknesses of a line array design is that they lack a little bit the ability of staging so precisely. As you correctly said, as you correctly noticed, they have the tendency to sound a little bit too big, right? Or very big, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But in order to improve their precision to defining and to focusing perfectly the various objects into the sound stage, we rationally displace the mid-high frequency drivers in such a way you have one straight line top to bottom of tweeters, which are firing internally within the stereo pair, and just behind them, one straight line of upper mid-ranges driver, which is firing a little bit externally. So that, in this way, you have the perfect off-axis performance firing internally. You just simple place the left speakers on the left, the right speakers on the right, and if you take a measurement of what's happening with a rake angle of from 15 degrees up to 30 degrees internally, you're going to find that over there there is the best performance of the speakers. If you add to this that also the filler mid-ranges, the low mid-ranges, are displaced in such a way they are firing against the listening spot, you can clearly realize that everything has been designed to provide the best possible musical signal directly firing against the sweet spot.
Yeah, the two mid drivers, or the mid bass drivers, you said they're actually facing the inside part of the axis if you're looking directly on the speakers for left and right. When you talk about voicing a speaker like this, how does that process go for you and your team? Because I know there are some discrepancies in the thought process for voicing it for maybe a certain market, like the German market or the UK market or the American market. Is there a specific frequency response or a sound that you guys went for when in terms of voicing?
Well, of course, every country has its own taste, which is culturally dictated. But what we learn in our long time Sonosfabric experience that there is a sound we strongly believe in, which is our sound, and which is the sound we believe is the best possible reproduction of music. So we keep going with that. We kept going with that sound for a very long time, and year by year, these things have been universally appreciated all over the world. Because it is a correct sound. It is something you strongly believe. Because anytime you strongly believe in something, people understand. And hopefully they appreciate as well. This time it has been slightly different. Because we paid a lot of attention within this design in being respectful of the Macintosh tradition and the Macintosh sound. So when in the beginning I told you it has been a learning process, part of this learning process has been about understanding the idea of sound Macintosh has and welcoming this idea of sound and implement it on the speakers. I would define it as a gorgeous sound.
Mm.
I would define it as gorgeous. I would define it as, gorgeous is the perfect word. Nothing more to add.
Given kind of the research that we've seen come out of the Harman Kardon group, where they do their Harman curve and they have this specific frequency they feel is the average of the appeal for the masses, do you guys work on that? Is it as simple as a frequency response curve to you? Is it more than that in getting that Macintosh sound?
Wow. It is absolutely more because, first of all, things said in that way or put it in that way, I don't know, are not really describing what's really happening acoustically, because there are so many things that can have an impact on how you would design a frequency response, for instance. I'll give you an example. Fletcher and Manson studies have demonstrated since so many years that the human hearing apparatus works in a particular way. And so we are not provided with a perfectly linear hearing apparatus. Our apparatus is not linear at all. We are much more sensitive to the frequency range which belongs to the scream of the weakest of our kind. And this is obviously related to our struggle to survive since the beginning of times, I would say. So the frequency range between 2K and 6K are the frequency where our hearing apparatus is most sensitive. And but it's not only like that. It's not only that our hearing frequency response is not flat, but it is also that this non-flatness changes in order of the amount of sound pressure lever which is applied. So in order of the amount of sound pressure lever, the frequency response of our hearing system changes as well. So what in Sonos Faber we started to do was to considering the average pressure level in a domestic listening spot in a domestic environment, which is rateable between 70 up to 80 dB, seeing what's happening in our human apparatus, hearing apparatus, at that frequencies. And then, of course, we slightly emphasize the frequency, the range of frequencies which are less sensitive to us, and we slightly de-emphasize the most sensitive ones. We did the same with Macintosh. Macintosh changes a little bit because since it's in line array, it has a decay in space which is lower than a point source, and so we made kind of different calculation. Well, actually, the sound pressure lever was the same, but we in the listening spot, but we of course considered that the Macintosh speaker is something you will listen a little bit more far away than a traditional point source speaker.
Is there any kind of special consideration that differed from this line source array to the speaker we're going to hear tomorrow from Sonos Faber? How did those two different design processes separate themselves as you went along?
Oh, well, I mean, you know, the structure of the process is more or less the same. They are totally different products and speakers from a technical standpoint. And so, you know, instead of designing a tiny, low, total harmonic distortion aluminium, magnesium, alloy diaphragm, this is what I did for the Macintosh. Here I'm designing an air-dried paper blended with some other natural fibers, mid-range being 6.5 inch wide, and total harmonic distortion is not a concern, but given the size, it would be okay. So many technical features changes. The process, the overall process is always the same. You start developing the speakers, you start knowing in advance which kind of enclosure and which kind of dimension you are dealing with. So you start to develop the right speakers, I mean, the right dimensions. Of course, if you consider one, the XRT 2.1K, you have totally a certain kind of speaker. If you consider the other, you have a totally different other kind.
Do you have a preference or a favorite material you like to work with in terms of drivers? Do you have one that you maybe think sounds better than others? Because there's a lot of different materials out there to choose from these days, and I know you guys you're talking about using two different materials for this particular execution.
Yeah, maybe even more than two. Well, my own preferences, but this is mainly a matter of taste, and this is also linked to the Sonos Faber history, is about natural materials, which in a point source, designed in a certain way like we do, works very well. But the reality is that the choice of material really depends, or it's linked to what you're aiming for. I mean, we went into the precision direction with XRT 2.1K transducers development, because we knew that staging, precision, and accuracy are the possible weaknesses of a line source design. So to compensate for that, we went to designing very accurate speakers, which maybe used in point source design might sound even aggressive and to your ears, but within a line source design, listen at a certain distance, they perfectly compensate the imprecision which normally affects a line.
Do you have any opinions on the use of beryllium in drivers? I know that's been a popular kind of material as of the past couple of years, getting a little more popular.
Well, I not only have an opinion, but we use beryllium with a very special treatment on top for the very first time in the hi-fi industry, I would say. And this is something we are very proud about. Beryllium has some from the beryllium diaphragms, talking about tweeters, obviously.
Yes, tweeters, yeah.
Because there are also beryllium dome mirrors, which are quite interesting.
That sounds expensive.
Yeah, they do. they definitely do. Beryllium tweeters have, to me, one fantastic thing, which is an amazing transparency and an amazing microdynamic. This is what I really love. But, of course, since they have normally the tendencies to pick just out of our theoretical audio band, audio listenable band, so they have the tendencies to pick just around 25K, and in theory our listening range should stop at 20K, but it's not true. I mean, it is, but... This is a long thing to say. Anyway, the beryllium has this fantastic property, microdynamic, I was saying, and transparency, but have the tendency to sound a little bit aggressive, a little bit unnatural, I would say. So, back in 2014, we designed a very limited run speaker, crazy design. It was called Extrema, under the Sonos Faber brand. And it was a speaker which was tiny, but about extreme solutions. And the extreme solution we came out for the high frequency was to use a beryllium diaphragm, but with a carbon-like diamond coating on top.
Wow.
And the beautiful thing of this treatment, which is quite dangerous, because anytime you're dealing with beryllium, you know, it's dangerous. And extremely expensive, is that it is able to change a little bit the thickness of the diaphragm without almost without affecting the weight, so that it simply moves much more higher the resonance frequency of the material, such higher that you wouldn't perceive that clearly, and so you have exactly all the very good properties of beryllium without having the side effect of kind of an aggressive sound. Mm. Unfortunately, this process is extremely, extremely, extremely dangerous and expensive. And on the other hand, we reached a result which we like the same time with our special Sonos Faber DAD tweeter, which is implemented in the AIDA.
So there's a bit of give and take in any type of speaker design.
Yeah.
Nothing is perfect.
Yeah.
Of all of the barriers to design, the challenges that you see, which one would you like to remove in order to help make the perfect speaker? Oh, and we could add the no cost. You know what I'm saying?
Well, of course. No cost is something very desirable. Of course, having no cost will allow you to do amazing things. Another thing I'd like to remove, but in theory, because I know it's really necessary and it really belongs to who we are. Sometimes when you are dealing with an industrial designer, he's asking you to do things which may conflict with the world of physics and the world of electroacoustic. So if I could remove to deal with industrial designs, I would be happy. But unfortunately, I have to, and it's even a friend, so I can't.
I mean, just to dig a little bit deeper on that particular point, I mean, is there like speed? Like, if you could make the fastest driver ever, is there, let's say, is there a material? What qualities of a material would you like to work with in a driver that make the best sound? So you're just pulling out, oh, this one's not stiff enough, this one's not fast enough. What variables would you like to remove in order to make the perfect driver? Is it simply just the lightest, fastest, stiffest material out there?
I believe that we are some amazing material today. We have nothing to complain about that. Of course, if you want to look at the future, of course, you would like to make the interaction between the human being and the speaker different. You would like to have a speaker able to disappear. I'm dreaming right now. Mm-hmm. Or you would like to have something which is, a system which is able to create an hologram of the singer in front of you to make the thing even more realistic. From a technical standpoint, we have so many different choices. Let's talk about the mid-band. If I'm talking about the dynamic of the mid-band, nothing sounds like a horn. Mm-hmm. If I talk about the transparency, nothing sounds like a dome, mid-range. If I'm talking about the overall natural presentation, nothing sounds like a paper mid-range. And I don't even know how to meld together all those properties within one driver. If somebody knows, please do it.
That's good. I like that. That's very insightful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I just want to thank you guys both so much for joining us on the show today. It's been very enlightening.
Thank you to you.